The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Thursday. Gary, how are you?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a fun day. It's going to be a fun day.
It is.
Sad day, but still fun. But sad. I mean, the Alex Trebek news yesterday when I first saw the headline from TMZ when it first came out.
Yeah, right.
And he had put, they had the video. Mm-hmm. And so I hadn't seen it anywhere else, and I put the video on, and it was like, oh.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it said he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and you see it's only like a little over a minute long. And I'm like, how is he going to get this all in a minute? I mean, that's one of the things I was questioning. And at the end where he throws in the line, you know, that, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but I have to make it because I've just signed a, you know, an extended contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your heart just broke.
Yeah. I mean, you think about a staple in American culture.
Yeah.
How many references have there been over the years to Jeopardy alone? I mean, between Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, really, if you think about that, in terms of game shows, think about all the different game shows over the years, and these what I call dinner time game shows. You know, right after your evening news, mm-hmm. So you're kind of coming down from all of what you were just, well, back in the day. For those under the age of 90, evening news is something they still have it. You don't see it, but. The networks have the little half-hour thing that they do where they leave everything out that's damaging to the Democrats, and then they, of course, spend a half hour, 22 minutes of actual programming time going after the current president. But I digress. And then you kind of slide into the game show thing. And the thing with Jeopardy is that everybody wants to be Trebek. You know, there is that almost the professor kind of situation with the audience, right? You want to have the answer to every question before they actually say it.
But you're right. I don't think most people view him as a game show host.
No, he's not. And he's very funny.
Oh,
if you
the
watch
dry humor.
Oh my gosh!
And
if
dry.
You watch the show and pay attention, he's very funny. I mean. They say you have to be brilliant to be funny. Now, I know this because I'm funny. So,
do we have to put up with this?
Oh, yeah,
yeah, continue.
We actually do.
Okay.
The answer is yes. And so.
Can I have for $200?
What is yes, Gary? In the form of a question, please. But there are so many pop culture references over the years. I mean, even when, like, you're waiting for something. You know, you'll be with some friends hanging out, and all of a sudden you're waiting for something, and then somebody inevitably starts the theme to the game show, right? To Jeopardy. I mean, with Wheel of Fortune, it's, you know, hello, can I buy a vowel, please? That kind of thing. But really with Trebek, it was always about that professor thing, and you always felt, and I believe it, that he's very familiar with all of the topics, each of the, every question that is on that board, that he is fully aware and educated on. And it is it's really great to watch because if you get one answer right during the entire, you know, 30-minute program, it makes you feel just a little bit smarter for the day. But it was kind of an educational thing where they also had the fun.
Well, the incredible thing is, you know, you and I have talked about things that are just part of the American culture, part of the institution of America. And we've talked about the fact that MASH, which was on for, 10 years? Mm. Then the repeats that went on decade after decade. And then they took it off for a while. And about 2 years ago, it came back on again. And you see it on every channel. And so you have multi-generations that know, you know, what it is. And I've said this before. It's happened to me where I've just walked into the house and flicked through the TV and, you know, you're going, nothing there, nothing there. And you're not going to watch TV, but you just put it on. Oh, there's MASH. You put it. And then you do stuff around the house and it's on in the background.
Yeah.
And it's just, you don't even realize you're doing it. It's just, oh, there's a comfort zone, just a comfort zone there. And I look at Jeopardy on, when did he win? 82, 83 maybe, was it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly which year, it's something similar around there, though.
And I remember that when Cheers, there was a Cheers episode mm-hmm. with Jeopardy mm-hmm. where Cliff goes on Jeopardy. And if you remember, there was a confusion with the question.
Right.
And, Cliff got so upset, and Trebek walks into the bar one night not knowing that's where Cliff is. And says, oh, Cliff, you know, you were right and everything else, and we somehow got it wrong. And Norm looks at him and says, oh, it's really nice of you to come in here to tell Cliff that. He goes, what do you mean? I was just coming in here to get a drink. I had no idea he was going to be here. That guy scares me. And, you know, and it was just, but yeah. But the point, and I just, and I haven't seen that episode, I don't know, in 20 years. Mm-hmm. But it stuck in my head
right.
because it was Alec Trebek, and it was the Jeopardy, it was called the Jeopardy episode of Cheers. Now, that had to be, 91, 92, maybe?
Right.
Maybe 93, because I think that was the last year was 90. 93 would have been the last year, I believe, of Cheers. So it was either 91, 92, or 93, I'm going to guess. And it was already ingrained into the American culture.
Oh, yeah.
And when I think about that, and I think that that's over 25 years ago, that's over a quarter of a century ago, that you're talking about somebody who has been in people's homes now going on four decades. All new shows, not repeats of the same thing over and over again.
Right.
But consistently in Americans' homes over that period of time. And that's why when it hit and I saw it on TMZ, I just went, wow, in about 1 minute. There's not going to be anything else that I see on Facebook or Twitter. This thing is going to dominate for the next hour because of the impact, culturally speaking, but in a very subtle way.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Very subtle. In the background, I still today, every time I go to see my parents, they'll watch the nightly news, and even though I scream and go, you know, guys, You know the liberal bent here. Yeah, we know, but, you know, there's nothing else. And my dad, I told you, he got cable. Still got the cable sticking out of the wall, but mm-hmm. he just will not pay for it. It's got nothing to do with it. It's like, we've offered to pay for it. It's like, no, I will not pay for TV. So mm-hmm. they watch the nightly news, and then it's Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Jeopardy every night.
Yeah.
Jeopardy's always on.
Yeah. Well, and it's what's interesting is the theme song, the tone of the show, the announcer, Trebek, and his voice and all of that just became part of almost the dinnertime conversation.
Yes, it has.
Because you, for me, you feel like you're at home. It's the same thing with me. If I go home, my parents will be watching Bret Baier. They'll turn over. They'll watch, Jeopardy. There's that routine that is, you know, that's what they watch, right? In those time periods, but nothing's ever wavered from Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. You know, I mean, they watch it.
And by the way, Wheel of Fortune is part of that whole thing, Jeopardy.
It's with Trebek. I don't know that I'm sure somebody else could have done it. But frankly, it wouldn't have been the same if anybody else, because he just has the tone. By the way, I'm old enough to remember when he had a mustache. We both are.
Yes.
That's how old we are. And the news coming down, it's just like, it's like one of those family members.
Well, it is at that point, and I know that when I saw it, I went, oh, no. And then it just hit me what a cultural institution of America he is and Jeopardy is. Mm-hmm. But it, again, in a very subtle way. It's right. not loud. It's not. It's not a like a rock band. It's not like a a rock idol that people were terribly sad right. about, because it's just always been in the background in a subtle way, and you've never really recognized how important and how dominant it has been culturally speaking until you reach a moment like yesterday when that news came across.
Right.
And it was
yeah.
whoa.
Yeah. I mean, I remember last year when Alan Alda announced he had Parkinson's, and it was the same thing. MASH was in your home every week. You know, Jeopardy is in your home every night, but
every night,
Alan yeah. Alda became for me and really kind of following people who are funny. I loved Alan Alda on MASH, and there was something that happened this past season on Ray Donovan on Showtime, which is the show I watch, and the main character, his doctor, is Alan Alda. It's like just a guest where mm-hmm. he's only going to do one or two, but the connection there is that the main character's brother, Terry Donovan, has Parkinson's. And I thought, it was this, connection clearly that the producers and writers had with that. And I think a nod to Alan Alda. I mean, I always call him one of my favorite liberals. He always has that smile on his face, the stuff that he did after MASH, anytime he did a presentation or anything else like that. It's always great. So you hear those illnesses, and it really is. It's like an extended family member that's suffering, and you certainly don't want to see them go through that.
So he said he's going to at least go through the end of this year. I don't know when the end of the season is.
Yeah,
when the end is when a syndicated show like that. But and then see where he goes from that. But keep him in your thoughts and your prayers, because he is a tough road ahead. Also coming up here on the show, I love this editorial headline: Speaker Ocasio-Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
To be or not to be anti-Semitic? Mm-hmm. That now is the Democrats' question. We'll get to that. The trade deficit skyrockets, tariffs and all. Mm-hmm. People still buying more. Now, we knew this, but the official numbers came out yesterday for the entire year. We'll get to that. Is the president losing another loyal supporter, mm-hmm. Ann Coulter? See the Lou Dobbs piece yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Not happy at all about the president getting together with all... I believe, I don't know if it's Ivanka and all these corporate leaders to talk about, legal immigrants coming into this country to take all the jobs that are opening up for them.
Mm-hmm.
Lou Dobbs, not happy with that one. We'll get to that. After the report that the NSA has officially shut down the mass public surveillance, the whole cell phone thing, we'll tell you about the Democrat that calls James Clapper a liar again. This is something that has always bothered you and I, because it was the Democrats that looked at the NSA during the Obama administration and wrote and said, what the heck is going on? They couldn't make it public because it was top secret. And we've asked to this day and never been able to get an answer. Where the hell were the Republicans in all of this?
Right. Because it was Wyden and Udall, two Democrats,
right.
that wrote to the Justice Department and said, we believe that this FISA court judge is misinterpreting this part of the Patriot Act.
Right. And the Republicans were nowhere to be found on that issue at all. And to this day, we've wondered why. And it was Wyden that came out yesterday, because Clapper was saying, hey, I didn't lie to Congress when I said there was no surveillance. I misunderstood the question. And Wyden said, that's a lie. And I know that's a lie, because I told you the question. I had submitted the question to you early on, so you knew it was coming. And then I had you clarify it afterwards, and you gave me the same response. You're
right.
lying.
Yeah.
And that's why we've always stated Clapper committed perjury during the Obama administration and got away with it. And now he's judging Trump? Please. The DNC says Fox News will not host a Democratic presidential primary. President speaks on North Korea and a whole bunch more. Your calls and comments all coming up. If you want to get in, we've got a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. So, it's interesting times for the Democrats. To be or not to be anti-Semitic. I mean, it's just the excuses that have come out. I mean, it's obvious. Look, we know where Representative Omar, we know what her beliefs are. You know, she believes that Israel does not have the right to exist. We know that. She's an anti-Semite. We all know that. It isn't, you know, that, well, she's naive and, you know, we have to talk to her about the thing. She knows exactly what she's doing. She knows exactly what she, oh, she's a, what? Because she's new to Congress. She doesn't know what she's saying. She knows exactly what she's saying. Look, the reason the people are upset is the anti-Semitic statements that she made, especially when she implied that the only reason that American politicians support Israel is because the Jewish lobby is paying them off. Which is the whole point. Jews are rich, and they pay off to get whatever they want from Americans. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, she couldn't have been more crystal clear of what she meant by that.
Yeah, and but you know, it's the old freshman, not old. It's kind of new since January, I guess. The old freshman excuse. Where's that come from? They ran for office. They ran a campaign. Oh, but we believe the party can do one of two things. You can separate yourself from this, or you can live and deal with this, and this will become the norm in your party.
And the other point is when she was talking about the fact that if you support Israel, she's not going to be a part of that because she doesn't have due loyalties. Her loyalty is to the United States. No, there's nothing about due loyalties, dual loyalties, you know, I can support a lot of different things. And it's not the same thing as being an American citizen. Because I support Israel does not mean I'm an Israeli citizen. Simply means I support them. And I support their right to exist. There is no dual loyalty.
No.
It's just, I mean, it's they're in a mess right now. And the Wall Street Journal had it right, I believe. They're one of their lead editorials. Speaker Ocasio-Cortez, who is now one of those that is backing Omar and her statements.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about that the other day when we were talking about the Green New Deal and how everything was going to be paid for. And even before you get to the Green New Deal, how young people of today are going to be strapped with that debt. And we said, including Ms. Ocasio-Cortez 20 years from now when she's Speaker of the House. And don't ask me why she's on TV every day. Don't ask me why she's right now the face of the Democratic Party, but she is. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
We'll continue to see scattered rain showers in the west in California and snow showers in some of the upper elevations of the mountain regions of the Pacific Northwest and Central Rockies. A portion of that energy has broken off and will provide snow showers for parts of the northern and central plains today. If you're going to be traveling I-80 in and around Des Moines all the way out through, well, Cheyenne, as a matter of fact, and I-29 north and south through Nebraska, you can expect to run into some wintry precip, as much as about 4 inches of snow expected. And you look at Des Moines today, a high of 25 degrees. By Saturday, the high is 41. The moisture remains, so we'll go from snow to rain in the course of the next 48 hours. That entire system is advancing eastward. We'll see portions of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio affected with some mixed wintry precip. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
25 hours of reality every week. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary. I just love this here. The Wall Street Journal in their editorial piece of Speaker Ocasio-Cortez. I just love this one. Don't be surprised if either Paul Ryan or John Boehner have put in a empathy call to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi this week. The former Republican House Speakers know all about willful backbenchers, and Democratic representatives Ilhan Omar and Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez make the GOP Freedom Caucus look like powder puffs. This week's Amazing House Revolt involves a leadership attempt to discipline Ms. Omar for her latest vile anti-Semitic slur, as Democratic Representative Elliot Engel described the comment she made at a public forum last week. Remember, that's another Democrat
right. Criticizing
her, referring to the U.S.-Israeli relationship. Ms. Omar said, "I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it's okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country." After New York Democrat Nita Lowry also criticized her remark, Ms. Omar doubled down, writing, "I should not be expected to have allegiance pledge support to a foreign country in order to serve my country in Congress or serve on a committee," accusing American Jews of putting allegiance to the Jewish state above loyalty to America is an anti-Semitic classic. This came a mere 2 weeks after the House leaders leaned on Ms. Omar, who was Muslim, to apologize for her earlier remarks that indulged in anti-Semitic tropes. So this time, House leaders went further and decided to draft a resolution denouncing anti-Semitism that was supposed to get a vote on the House floor on Wednesday. The draft language didn't mention Ms. Omar by name, but it did at least condemn smears such as accusing Jews of dual loyalty. Then came the backlash from the progressive left. If we're going to criticize her, then we have to criticize all intolerance.
That's
when everything went crazy. Here, you know, here's the point here, because, you know, she's on one of the foreign committee and a lot of, you know, your Republicans saying she should be kicked off of that. And, you know, like we've stated before, look, we want these people to keep talking. They're elected representatives. We don't want her kicked out of Congress. She should keep talking and tell us exactly what she believes. The last thing we want to do is quiet her down. We want her anti-Semitic beliefs to be promoted by her. And if the Democratic Party believes this is where they should be going, because this is the point here in this audio cut that I have here from Texas Representative Dan Crenshaw. He said, remember, when you're on a committee, you're on the committee because you agree with the party. If she's saying these things, it's an endorsement of the party for these ideas.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that the Democrats have here, is if they leave her on the committee and she keeps throwing out anti-Semitic statements, Republicans can make the case that that is the beliefs of the leadership of the Democrat Party, because it's the leadership that appoints you to those positions. I went, oh, that's a good point. But here he is with Martha McCallum yesterday.
Time, and it's been explained away multiple times now. Yeah. There's been apologies made for her. They said, well, we just need to have dialogue. She need to help her understand what she's talking about so that she understands how much it's hurting people.
She was elected by the people of her district. She comes to Washington, just to play the other side of this for a moment. She comes to Washington. They know who she is. She's been campaigning. She's been talking about what she believes in for a long time. So shouldn't she have the freedom of speech to say what she wants to say and represent her people? And if they decide that they don't like the way they're being represented, they'll change their mind in a year and a half.
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, every member here has the right of freedom of speech, okay, and they have the right to represent their own views, just like we have the right to criticize it and to condemn it. Now, it is something different when we're talking about what committee is she on, because the real problem here is that she has a platform on the Foreign Affairs Committee to condemn Israel. Okay, so that tells us that the Democratic leadership also supports that, because here's the thing. This is how we are assigned to committees here in Congress. Our leadership tells us what committees we can be on.
Right.
Okay. So when there is something that the party is against, they will not put you on that committee. And we've done that in our party, and I think they should do that in theirs, unless they actually believe in what she's saying with respect to Israel.
Right. And that's because if you're saying this person should be on this committee, and that would be leadership, then you're making that choice for that to be the representation of your party and of you as leader.
And what you see here by Pelosi, you're backing off on this, mm-hmm. you know, leaving the meeting, being asked questions, and just walking right out, as you heard about that yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We have always said we don't know how Nancy Pelosi is going to get through all of this, because you have an extreme radical left, the most extreme radical left that we have ever, that we have seen in modern times in Congress, that is very quickly taking over the narrative of the Democrat leadership, that we are the ones that are going to tell you, and they are beliefs that are viewed as radical, not just by the majority of Americans, but on most of the issues by a majority of the rank and file Democrats. That is how far left this party is going. And again, you do give ammunition. And I'm telling you right now, I mean, it's as if I'm in the Republican Party right now with Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Omar and a few others, it's like, just keep talking. Keep talking. Promote it. Keep this in the news. Because this is just, to the average American out there, this is as radical as can be. We didn't even get to the Ocasio-Cortez comment the other day about 9/11.
Right.
That we should have done nothing. We shouldn't have got involved.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't have fought back. We shouldn't have gone after Al-Qaeda. I mean, these are as radical statements as you can possibly get.
Remember, it was the Republicans removed Steve King.
Yes.
From committee assignments following comments that were perceived as racist. That people were saying these are racist comments. He tried to backtrack on that a couple of different times.
Yes, he did. Yeah,
his story didn't add up, and we went over that, and we're like, yeah, that doesn't add up, a couple of different times, actually. But I think in the resolution, in the House resolution, condemning that kind of speech, I have to go back, but I think they named him. I've got to go back and see if they did or not. Because he spoke on that day when that resolution was being put up for that vote. I'll have to go back and see. But I think I'm right on that, that it either referred directly to those comments or named him by name. Again, the party can choose whatever direction they want to go. If they believe it's okay to be associated and have her on committees and represent their party,
then it becomes a part of your platform
exactly.
of the Democrat leadership.
Right, and the same with Ocasio-Cortez and anything that she's promoting. You know, the whole idea of the Democrats coming out and, you know, some Democrats condemning or trashing or dismissing, I guess, the Green New Deal or other things. You can decide whether that's going to be the future of your party. Now, those are two separate types of events. But still, you have to decide where the party's going to go. The party has to decide that. We believe that she is, Ocasio-Cortez, is the future of the party. And if you believe that anti-Semitic comments should be allowed in your party, great, make that choice.
If you believe that your party should be the party that believes that Israel does not have a right to exist, then so be it. You have a right to your free speech
yep.
and your platform as a political party.
Yep.
Go for it.
Right. Yep. That's, you make the choice as the party. And yep. is this the future of the party? Pelosi will have to decide. By the way, I don't think Pelosi's the future of the party. I don't think Schumer's the future of the party.
No.
I think this kind of radical behavior, whether you're talking about radical ideas or radical language, is the future.
You know, you and I had said a couple of years ago, after the president won, we said the Democrats have to make a choice. Either they're going to have to moderate more, or they're just going to go absolutely as far left as you can imagine. They've actually gone further than I ever thought that, you know, they went further left than I ever thought they would as quickly as they did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because remember there were the Tim Ryan out of Ohio. Remember when he ran up against Pelosi and he lost after the 2016 election, but he still got a third of the vote. And he would say, look, we can't be involved in this identity politics. We need to start talking about what we're going to do for the people of the United States. We have to focus on how we're going to help Americans. We have to focus on Americans. And where have they gone? Completely the opposite. Mm-hmm. Completely. I mean, 180 degrees different. You wonder when somebody like a Tim Ryan is going to eventually say, I'm more comfortable being a Republican. When will that start happening? When you will start having defections of Democrats stating, I don't know what party this is.
Yeah.
This is the Democrat Party that was supposed to help people. Look, it was Van Jones said, criminal justice reform, conservatives and Republicans own that now. Trump owns that now.
Yeah.
Democrats aren't even talking about even how to help Americans in prison anymore.
Yeah. You know, Claire McCaskill. Because when you said we're the Democrats that are really going to say this is the radical left. Claire McCaskill did. And we talked about that specific language.
Yes.
They didn't just, you know, sit down. They didn't just throw it over to the copywriter and say, oh, yeah, just throw out something, you know, and separate her from the other Democrats. No, that word crazy Democrats was used specifically because that was coming back to them in research.
Yep.
And she used it in the ad. She could have chosen not to. She's Claire McCaskill, and she approves this message. That's how that works. Well, how'd that work out? Tim Ryan, good luck.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Robert in New York City. Robert, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Listening to what's going on and what you're saying, and it's a big concern that you have a congressman who could say such, you know, repeated anti-Semitic remarks, and when you couple that with the recent the positions they have about infanticide, the insensitivity to life, it's as though this party is not much different than like a Nazi-like party. It's a very dangerous direction when you have an insensitivity to life and you have anti-Semitism.
Wow.
And you have a group of people who just seem to be steamrolling the leadership. It reminds me a lot like what happened in Germany, where you had
When you bring that up, Robert, I think about how who was it on CNN that made the comparison of something the president said to killing 6 million Jews? And I'm like, really? What was it the other day? We played it.
Yeah, we played the audio.
I can't remember precisely what it was, but we're like, really? You're trying to make that analogy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're trying to make that analogy with the president, it's easier to make it here with the Democrats right now, is it not?
Right. Yes.
By the standards of the Democrats who are making it against the president.
Right.
It does come out as being absurd. You look at it and you say, wait a minute. But, you know, we've talked about it overall and all the major issues. You look at the Democrats' positions. They're not even sane. That's the whole point. Their ideas and things they believe aren't even sane. It's not okay, I disagree with you on this. It's like, your idea is nuts.
I got to go back and find the article with somebody breaking down the media's cover-up. I think it was the New York Times, not cover-up, but carrying of the lie of the Green New Deal excuses, remember?
Yes.
Oh, that was just a rough draft that was posted accidentally, that kind of thing.
Right.
And someone went after them. I got to go find that article today that I saw. But it was, they made very solid points in the media defending, but the media can't and essentially that the New York Times got burned on it because everybody was looking at that going, yeah, you can't make that case. You can't make that case that it was accidental and these items were just joking and all those excuses that came out for it. This is what you hear. Well, don't take her seriously. She's just a freshman. She's not the face of the party. Really? Because she's everywhere.
Well, tell that to Nancy Pelosi today.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Oh, yes. Yes. I'm just sitting here looking at all the different news items here, just going through, just looking at Drudge Report going, wow. You know, I haven't seen it yet. You've been talking to me a lot about it during our pre-show and mid-show meetings. Yeah. I haven't seen it. I've never asked you precisely, did you see the Michael Jackson documentary?
Yes, I did.
Okay, you did see it.
I saw the whole thing.
Okay.
And I watched the Oprah special after.
Yeah, you just...
So I have the app. I have one of the apps. There's HBO Go and there's HBO Now. And... So it aired on HBO Sunday night, part one, Monday night, part two, and then after part two, the Oprah special, where she sits down with the two men who are accusing Michael Jackson, and the producer and director of the documentary, and goes through it. And she's there with the audience is made up of men who were sexually abused as well. And there are some famous faces actually in that audience. And a former NFL player, the actor, and I'm blanking on his name right now, Edwards, I think is his last name from ER. And they talk about, you know, this thing that happened with Michael Jackson, both of them separate incidents. And it was a total of 4 hours. I actually watched the second part posted early on the app, so I was able to watch that on Monday. Being sick, I wasn't able to really do anything, so I've just been laying in bed and watching TV. They make some very, very solid points. The first reaction that I had, and I kept shouting it out loud, is what kind of parent would allow their kids to go sleep with any, sleepover, stay at any celebrity's house, regardless of what that celebrity is promising to do for that child. For those that don't know, and I didn't know this, who these two individuals were, one of them was a young child, 5 or 6 in Australia. He did a Michael Jackson routine where he danced, right? He won a contest there in Australia to meet Michael backstage. He ended up being a choreographer for NSYNC, for Britney Spears, and was very successful later in life as a choreographer. The other was the young man that was in the Pepsi commercial with Michael Jackson where the young boy wanders into his dressing room, which I also thought after this documentary was a really creepy commercial. And then Michael Jackson walks in, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the two individuals. That's those, and they're now both, I think, in their 30s. And the allegations and the stories are very similar to the former accusers. Now, the first accusations that came out where Michael Jackson was, where he was arrested, where he was charged, mm-hmm. Johnny Cochran was his lawyer. Those two individuals, these two boys who were young teens or preteens at that time, actually testified for Michael Jackson. The second time, one of them, the boy who was in the commercial, did not. The second time he went to trial. And it was, remember, Macaulay Culkin,
right,
testified for Michael Jackson in that trial. The young boy who grew up to be the choreographer also testified for Michael Jackson in that trial. And it's to hear their stories and to hear the similar stories from other people. For a lot of people that were Michael Jackson diehard fans, and I mean the real diehard fans that still today defend him and say, these people are just in it for fame and money or whatever. Because remember, the first suit, and I think a couple of others, were settled out of court. The first one where Johnny Cochran was
right,
a lawyer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In the second case, he was acquitted by a jury. But they even show some of the footage and a couple of jury members, one of the jury members saying that, you know, one of the guys that was on the jury who ultimately acquitted Michael Jackson said, look, I believe that he probably molested young boys. We just didn't have real proof here. And so we followed the direction of the judge, essentially, and they acquitted Michael Jackson. And now, after Michael Jackson died, the one who actually defended him twice and testified for him twice actually had regrets about that. And yeah, that's where it ends up.
The two men who both testified for him said they were lying when they testified.
And by the way, they
right.
both...
Right, they... From what I know, they both said they were lying when they testified.
Yes. Because now they're saying it actually did happen. And when they testified for him, they said, no, nothing happened when we knew him and stayed at his house. It was just a sleepover. The parents, they're still separated from their parents. The one from Australia has an older brother who clearly in the documentary is like, I just don't get how my mom let that happen. She moved to the States. The father stayed behind. He was diagnosed as bipolar. He eventually committed suicide. In fact, he committed suicide right after the oldest brother had left Australia. And it was, you know, a very sad situation. But still today, both of those men are estranged from they're not at the point of forgiving their mothers, according to their comments on that Oprah interview special that she did after the documentary. According to the producer, now the one who's a choreographer actually did sue Michael Jackson. He went after him years ago. I think it was 2014, if I remember correctly.
Reading here from ABC News that both sued. Both were rejected on a technicality, but they're suing again.
Right, and the family is suing HBO, the producer and directors of the documentary for $100 million. It's $100 million lawsuit.
Right, the state suing.
Right. The which is essentially the family.
Right.
And so then it comes off as okay. They're essentially trying to make their case. Right. Because you could see it as that, okay? Because if you're to believe that Michael Jackson is innocent, and these people are in it for money, then you've got all of those all of those events lined up in that they're suing. The producer and director said he did not compensate either one of them, but and they only mentioned the one lawsuit, unless I missed that other lawsuit. But the point being is that it was very convincing to me in watching it. But you have to keep in mind, in a setting that's, you know, you're getting that. Well, it is, in this case, it's one-sided. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't have anyone from the Michael Jackson estate. Clearly, Michael Jackson is no longer around to defend himself. But let's look at the facts, and let's at the very least look at situations where you had opportunity. If you believe Michael Jackson, just looking at the theory that he was he abused these children, and he was a pedophile. The treatment of them, and they had phone recordings where he left messages saying things like "I love you" to the whole family. But it was very odd behavior. But you have to ask yourself, what man in his mid 30s does that? You had to remember in the one trial, I believe it was the second trial, you had a maid that testified that she saw at one point Michael Jackson naked with one of the boys. The mother of one of the boys was at the Neverland Ranch, and she says she went to go into the theater area. He had a whole theater there, right, and where they watched movies, and the door was locked. And they had a bedroom in the back of the theater. It was just this room in the back of the theater behind the seats where they could sit and where they could lay in bed and watch movies. And according to one of the boys, he was abused in that room. And the mother says, I went to walk in one time unannounced and the door was locked. And she said Michael Jackson made the excuse that, oh, sorry, I didn't know it was locked. And it's as disturbing on so many levels as it really gets. I mean, because you look at the behavior of Michael Jackson, you look at anybody who would do that. I thought to myself, the first thing I do is go straight to the parents.
Yeah, it goes straight
Why
to the parents.
Why aren't you protecting your children at every turn? Right. I don't care who it is. How much of a sycophant do you have to be to say, oh, yeah, you can, and by the way, Michael Jackson went over to one of the boys' houses on a regular basis and slept with him. Did sleepovers to a tiny house, like a 1,500, 1,600 square foot home in suburbia right there in California. Sorry, it's hard to convince me wasn't going on.
Right, that's the point that I've always thought about. We wouldn't be here if you had response, irrespective of what actually happened.
Yeah.
Let's say it's still 100%, hypothetically, it's 100% innocent.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a sleepover. It's still completely and totally irresponsible of the parents to let an adult in a bedroom with a child.
I have three daughters and I have six granddaughters. There are clear boundaries when they're in our home. There are always were with my daughters growing up, and they'll tell you this, clear boundaries. I wanted them to have their privacy. Now I'm going to knock on the door, you know, of your bedroom. And, you know, you come to the door, that's the etiquette. But there are boundaries. And there are boundaries because to me, that's my moral code. I'm going to set those boundaries, and that's the way it's going to be. And I want my children, and now they're all, my children are all adults, to practice the same kind of moral behavior in that respect. That you have those boundaries. I mean, my daughters had friends that slept over, and I was nowhere in sight when that kind of stuff happened. My wife loved those girls that I still today, some of them call my daughters from other fathers, and they're great adults now and had strong relationships. with my daughters. Great people, but still I knew there needed to be boundary issues. It helped because for a lot of that, I was actually working this shift. And, you know, so they could watch evening TV and I was sleeping and preparing for work, you know, in another part of the house. Here, there were no boundary issues. And I just, for the life of me, because I can't say, I don't have evidence. I wasn't there. I can't say whether Michael Jackson was guilty or not. I can tell you it's very convincing.
But there wouldn't even be questions if the parents
You would not. And it's not just these two boys.
Right.
Others that were allowed to sleep at Neverland.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
It really is.
That's bizarre. And frankly, that to me is immoral.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on trip planning. All drivers know that finding secure parking spots is an increasing problem. Let's consider ways to win the parking battle, like pre-planning when and where you will stop. Download a truck parking app that helps identify available spaces. Start your day earlier and grab spots before they're filled. Find a well-lit area, like a truck stop or a department store lot, if allowed or permitted, that's less appealing to thieves. Secure your truck by closing windows. Use window screens or shades. Be sure to hide your valuables. Use anti-theft devices like a container, fifth wheel, and air brake locks. And use an in-cab camera to document suspicious activity. Staying safe and within the hours of service is important. Having a sound parking strategy helps with both. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Thanks so much for being here this morning. Let us go to James in Riverhead, New York. James, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
A lot of things you're talking about are inadmissible hearsay. The mother went to the door, and it was locked. How do we know that happened? And for you to keep repeating all these things that the mother said and the father. They went through a trial, the two boys. I know they're not related. And they testified he didn't do anything.
Look, we're just...
We're talking about it. Hey, hold on, James.
James.
We're talking... James, we're talking about the documentary. We're not assigning guilt or belief of anything. There was a compelling case to be made.
Rumors.
No, we're not.
No, we're not. No, we're not. Bye, James.
No, we're not.
No, we're not.
We're not spreading rumors.
Absolutely not.
Rumors would be if you didn't have somebody stating something.
Right. I'm telling you what they displayed in the documentary.
And I think if you were listening to what we said, the major point that I believe that we both agree with is you wouldn't even have those questions because, as I've stated, hypothetically, let's say none of it is true whatsoever. And as you stated, we don't know what's true and what isn't true.
I wasn't in that room. In fact, nobody else was.
Right.
And that's an admission by those two boys in their separate incidents. Nobody else was in the room.
We mentioned that the testimony has been different from the documentary before.
Mm-hmm.
We covered it all. We did not give an opinion on it because we don't know and we never have.
Well, I will say this. Don't put words in our mouth and accuse us of doing something. That, by the way, that's not what you were doing. Wasn't just spreading rumors. That's lying.
Yes.
I'll say this, and I said it to a number of individuals since seeing the documentary. The one who became the choreographer, he was a choreographer when he testified the second time for Jackson. Well, that if you're going to try and dismiss witnesses, or dismiss a witness, in that case, you're going to look at him and say, well, it sounds like to me that you're saving your career. You're trying to save your career if you're a prosecutor. You're saying this because you're trying to save your career. Because right. he didn't come forth until after Jackson had passed away.
There would be no questions, though, even being asked if the parents, and that was the conclusion that we came to, mm-hmm. you wouldn't even have these questions or the documentary if the parents did the right thing.
Right. Yep. And we made the case, too, that it's a one-sided documentary. Yeah. You likely weren't going to get anybody from the Jackson estate to be on a part of that. I think the producer said they tried. Of course, they're not going to do that. They're not going right. to be a part of it.
Got the goods. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. You can catch our podcast anytime. Yep. Go to our website, redeyeradioshow.com, keyword podcast. We've got, of course, our daily show. If you miss one, how dare you? Or if you miss part of the show and you want to go back and listen to it, or if you love us so much that you just need to listen to it repeatedly, well, you need help. But you can still listen to the show at redeyeradioshow.com in the podcast form. Lots of new, in fact, some of my friends, hey, I've been listening to your podcast. And I'm like, hey, that's great. You know, because we understand sometimes people aren't up this late. That's great. Again, redeyeradioshow.com. And you can also check out our new podcast, The Extra Mile Podcast, where I sit down with people from the trucking industry. Speaking of Freightliner, Team Run Smart Pro, Henry Albert, is a guy who has been getting incredible fuel mileage, double-digit fuel mileage, trying to get it under various conditions at various speeds, hauling various weights and running various routes and everything else. But we talked to him about that in one of the upcoming episodes of The Extra Mile. He's a fascinating guy. He really is. And I've always said in life, you look at the people who have been successful at this or that, and you get some information from them in order to repeat that success for yourself. And you can do that with Henry Albert, part of the Freightliner Team Run Smart group now that is, closing in on 60,000 strong. But check it out, redeyeradioshow.com, keyword podcast.
To the last caller, please understand the different definition. Understand the definition of rumor.
Mm, yeah.
Rumor is not when somebody has a specific allegation. Now, the allegation may turn out to be false, but that is not a rumor.
Right.
A rumor is President Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election.
Exactly.
Based on whose accusation?
Right.
Well, we can't find anybody with that exact accusation. It really doesn't exist anywhere. We just continue to say it year after year after year, and we keep claiming we have no evidence or no specific allegations, but we believe he must have colluded with the Russians to hack the election. That would be a rumor to the right. last caller.
Mm-hmm.
In the Michael Jackson documentary, which I have not seen, which is why I asked you about it, because you've been talking to me about it in our pre-show meeting. And I said, well, you know, it's out there. And I just wonder what your complete thoughts were on it, because we never really got to it.
Because this goes back close to 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, before the first actual accusation and the first arrest and charges, there were rumors.
Initially there were rumors.
Those were rumors. And if the situation were the same, then we'd talk about the rumors. Then we could have a discussion about whether it was rumors or not. Clearly, when you have this, and I've got a problem with one-sided documentaries to begin with. What my opinion is doesn't mean anything, because even my opinion, if I were, I don't know, selected as a jury member, right, on one of the cases of these two individuals that are making these claims, I'd have to set that aside. My opinion doesn't matter. What I think is strange behavior doesn't necessarily mean guilt. I can, again, have my opinion that that's just weird that you're a 34-year-old man, and then you've got kids sleeping over alone.
Right.
I put, and very clearly, put the blame on the parents first. My kid's not sleeping with you. Imagine Elvis called up. Hey, man, I'd like to sleep in your son's bed. No,
not happening.
Elvis.
Right.
Not happening. I don't care how iconic or who they were. That's not happening.
But the last caller is indicative of what's happening right now because of the HBO documentary, and that's Michael Jackson fans going crazy against HBO, people like the last caller who believe it's all rumor, which, again, it's not rumor because the allegations have been there. Law enforcement has gone after him before. Mm-hmm. They did not find him guilty, but many of those same prosecutors believe that he is guilty. So when you say that we were peddling rumors, of course we're not. We're peddling the accusations of people and not assigning whether they're credible or not. In fact, asking questions, as we always do if you listen to this show, when it comes to any type of criminal case where we don't know, we can all have our suspicions. We can all say it's odd behavior, which would make you wonder, but there's a lot of odd behavior that happens in the world. But I think the one thing that you could absolutely conclude, we wouldn't even be here with any of the questions if the parents had acted properly.
Right. Right. If you invite us all out and we go to the, you know, Neverland Ranch and hang out for the day, that's great. We're all going to be hanging out together. You want to take some pictures with my son because, you know, you want to help his career? Great. But the fact of the matter is, and by the way, with both moms, it was odd to me that during the, you know, first part of the documentary, most of that first half, they're smiling, talking about, still in their mind, you can see this sycophant-like attitude toward Michael Jackson. I don't care who the person is. I would never put them up. Well, and Oprah mentioned this. Well, you know, at that time, he was like a god. Not to me, he wasn't.
No, not. Look, that's to me, to sit there and say that any parents suspends rational behavior because somebody is a star and you're dealing with their child, then you've got a serious parental issue there.
Yes.
Normal people, I do not believe, people that love and care about their children do not suspend reality because they're starstruck.
Right.
And if they do, they're not good parents. When I've seen a lot of the testimony, that in the last Michael Jackson trial, whatever, inappropriate things happen. Precisely what I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But it was inappropriate and in all likelihood rose to the level of lawbreaking with Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. That's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't sit in the court, so I can't tell you whether he was guilty or not. But a ton of inappropriate actions and behavior happened. I wasn't there, so I don't know. They didn't convict. Many of the jury thought, yeah, we believe he probably did it, but we had to follow what the judge said. Much like a lot of the other cases that we talk about where you lack the information. So people can believe it without assigning guilt.
Legal guilt, right. That's always the job of the jury.
Right.
Because that's the way the system is set up. You don't get to walk in and go, man, that guy looks like a freak. He must have done it. You likely won't get on a jury.
Look, O.J. Simpson killed those two people.
Yes.
Killed Nicole and Ron.
Right.
We know that. He wasn't found guilty.
Right.
There was enough evidence that we all know he did it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
O.J. Simpson may not be guilty under the law, but he is guilty in the minds of millions of Americans because the evidence showed he did it, whether they prosecuted or not. Does not change the reality of that.
Right, right.
Because of the information that we know, of the forensics that the public already knows, and any of the defense alibis or possible other scenarios that happened are not practical.
Right.
That's how you know.
Yep. No, I think if you look at that that entire scenario that played out repeatedly, by the way, with Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Sorry.
And by the
way, you can't make the case that he was just trying to help kids. The other defense was, no, he's just a child in his own mind.
No, please.
No. He was an adult.
And by the way, saying that about OJ is just so people know, so you can understand my prejudices and biases. He was my first sports hero.
Well, I've often said that Michael Jackson's live show that I saw on the Bad Tour was the greatest performance and show that I've ever seen. That's separate from whether or not I believe he was a pedophile. I have no, and that's the whole point of any kind of, and I wasn't really a big fan, actually. We escorted a couple of our, the radio station I was at the time, me and another employee from the radio station. We escorted them. We actually flew to Kansas City and we saw the show and we flew home. I mean, I was a DJ. I was playing the music on the radio. I wasn't the biggest Michael Jackson fan. He was pop culture. It was pop music.
Yes, yeah,
wasn't really my thing, but the show was an amazing show, and I mean all the way around, all the musicians, choreography, and everything else. You talk about shows; that one was about as well rehearsed and executed as you get in terms of live shows.
Yeah, that happens to all of us. I remember being, and I was dragged. My old girlfriend dragged me to see Luther Vandross, and I'm like, I'm not gonna. Fantastic show.
Right.
I mean, just fantastic.
Right.
Like, wow.
Yeah. I remember my wife taking me to see Carrot Top, and it was horrible. Horrible. I keep forgetting we're on in Vegas. Are we going to get a letter from his people?
And I actually like Carrot Top. He's funny. He's so
funny.
Bizarre. I mean,
yeah.
You know something? He's so over the top.
He's perfect for Vegas.
Yeah.
That's where I thought you were going with that, yeah.
Now, Aerosmith has their residency, I heard, going on that's been extended in Vegas.
Yeah. A lot of bands are doing that these days because those casinos will pay huge, huge, huge money, even for a six-week or eight-week residency.
That has to be weird, being a band that's always been on the road, and then you are in one spot.
Well, Steven Tyler talked about in their early days, they wouldn't have gotten anywhere if they didn't play every chance they got. I mean, they just got in a van and they just played everywhere. And they just went to every club and played as much as they could.
And I still haven't seen the American Pickers episode where they find the first the Aerosmith van. I've got to see that one.
Yeah. It'd be a cool van to have and restore, right?
Well, did they do it?
I don't know.
I never have been able to find that. Yeah. Maybe it's online some. I would pay for just to see, what was it, Mike, and what's the other guy's name? I forgot the other guy's name. But just to see their look and to see if they actually bought it or sold it or bought it. Because I always look for it on the menu.
Right.
But I haven't been able to find that one
yet. Yeah. But, you know, getting back to the whole thing with this is the we're in that era, and it happened a long time ago. In fact, when we talked about it politically with Obama and the whole rock star thing, but really it didn't start with Obama even. You could go back to Bill Clinton. To a certain extent, I think you could go back to JFK, but a number of politicians over the years, right, where people, especially on the left, had this adoration that went beyond the political ideology of the individual, and I always called it the Elvis effect, right, the pop culture effect, which is always been a part of politics, American politics, to a certain extent. But imagery became a thing when television came around and Ed Sullivan started putting bands and performers and Elvis and everything else. It became something where that adoration was different. It became that sycophant type behavior.
You're right.
And I think a lot of that is alive and well in politics. And that's why we've always said, I don't care who it is, somebody who is an actor, I may respect their work and enjoy their work, but dismissing all of my moral code to allow them unfettered access to my children?
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. I've never found that. Never had
in
that,
exchange
never
for
had
my
that awe thing yeah. for any real huge awe thing as a lot of people have, even for yeah. rock stars, whatever. I've never been that way. I've met a lot of people and it's like, nice meeting you.
No, it's always great.
You're a human being with the same kind of flaws
right.
and questions we have about our mortality as everybody yep. else has.
Sure. Exactly.
You do a neat thing. That's
right.
cool.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the top of the hour, the DNC says Fox News will not host any of the Democratic presidential primary debates.
Shocked. I am shocked.
I was shocked. I couldn't believe that.
I'm shocked. I'm just shocked.
And good. That's because they have too many people on Fox News that support Trump.
Yeah, right.
And has been pointed out many times. And the news division is different than the show division.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The news division is a different one. And if you look at Fox News, if you look at a Chris Wallace or Bret Baier or a Martha McCallum or a Bill Hemmer mm-hmm. or so many other Catherine Herridge. These are all respected journalists.
Yes.
They're all
right.
Even at competing networks, they are respected
sure.
journalists.
Right.
And it seems as if they're just forgetting that part of it.
Mm.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning. Just looking at all the different stories here that I have in front of me. It's one of those days where it's like, okay, where do we go?
You hit on something earlier in the show, and you said, we didn't even get to that part of this story or whatever it was. There's so many things that we will often, what we like to do, and we think have a responsibility to do, or certainly we believe it makes more compelling arguments so that people know that where we come from, why we have our opinions. We like to break down the items in the news, the scenarios and our beliefs and everything else. So we will often take more time. We have more time than any other major talk show, I think.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. Five-hour show. But that's the greatness, and we love to do that. But we often, there this part of a story or that part of a story, we kind of have to circle back and go to it maybe a day or two later quite often. But there's so much still. So it started back in the day when you started, Gary, in the 1920s in talk radio, where you would go out and get you'll go
me and Marconi
say, young man, can I get the newspaper, please? Here's a dime.
What's Babe Ruth doing today?
What's Babe Ruth doing? That's swell. I don't even know if they talked like that back then. I'm not sure. But anyway, back in the day when we first started doing this before we had the interwebs, you had to go out and buy the periodicals, cut out the. It was really a task to find enough stories. I mean, for a two-hour show, a three-hour
yeah.
show. But now, and then it became, all right, sorting through the truth and getting through the BS into the actual topic, sorting through the stories. Now it's just trying to hit all of the major stories because it just moves so quickly.
Yes, it does.
And there's so much in the news. Part of that is the hatred for the president. Part of that is the president being on Twitter. Part of that is just the world we live in. And I think it goes back to what we have said about President Trump, and that is he's the result. He's not the cause of this. It was ramping up in this direction anyway. Someone made the point, if you got Trump from Obama, then you're getting Ocasio-Cortez from Trump. No. You would have gotten her anyway. You would have. And I don't know who you would have gotten on the right. I have no idea. But Trump is a result of a reset for a lot of people.
Ocasio-Cortez is not a result of Trump.
No. Not at all.
Ocasio-Cortez is the acceptance of socialism and socialism / political idolatry that already exists in the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. So I don't view Ocasio-Cortez at all. But you make a great point that when we first got into talk radio, I know when I did, and that would have been in 1989. So a little bit after the it was actually after the Depression, not before. And that's what you used to worry about. And I started out doing a 1-hour show, mm-hmm. and then it went to 2 hours. I'll never forget how hard it was to fill 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Just so people understand the mindset, because you normally don't hear this kind of talk. What's the mindset of talk show hosts mm-hmm. when you go to do a talk show? Because you get that all the time. How do you guys do that? Mm-hmm. I don't know. We just go and do it. And doing it for such a long time. Don't even really think about it. But you did when you first got in. Mm-hmm. And I remember precisely. I don't know why you just remember. I remember the first day that I worked at our great station. This would have been in the spring. I only worked there for a very short time. In the spring of 94, it's about a 4 or 5 month period between working in Rockford, Illinois, and then going to where I was born and raised in Buffalo, New York, to a talk radio station. But I worked at our great affiliate, WLS, in Chicago. I'll never forget going up to the studios, and I forgot what floor it was on, many floors up, and looking over the city of Chicago and saying, whoa, mm-hmm. wow. It was like, wow, I can't believe I'm here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget doing my show prep the first night there, even though I'd done it many other places before, but just taking all the newspapers out and cutting all the different articles out of the newspaper. So everything that you already had was already 12 hours, it was
24,
a lot of
36
times,
hours, yeah.
12, 24, 36 hours old.
And if it came from a magazine, it could have been weeks old by then, right?
And so you were always, one of the things you were worried about is, well, what are they talking about on the show before me? And what do they talk about during the day? Because I don't want to be repeating what they've been repeating, but there was really no new news. Mm-hmm. You don't even worry about it these days. Now the thing, if there's anything I ever worry about, it's when you, in the middle of the day, and I don't know if you've ever had this discussion. We probably had, probably not this way, but one of the things I know is what I think of normally in the afternoon when there's just so many news items coming along, and all of a sudden you go on Twitter and it's like, you just like, it's just static noise. It's like, bleh. And the one thing I think about all the time is, how do I organize this tonight? That's the only thing I really think about. How do I organize all the noise that's everywhere? How do you organize that into one coherent show where you hit this topic, this topic, this topic, this topic, this topic? How do I break down all the insanity of the day and all the static noise? We were calling it white noise, but then we realized we shouldn't put a color to it.
Right.
But all the white noise of the day, which is just out there and it's grating, and it's, how do you do a show where everybody's just, it seems you get the impression everybody is insane. And that's where you have to move away from that a little bit, and you realize, no, everybody isn't insane. Everybody goes, you walk outside, you go to the store, you have conversations, and you're like, oh, okay. Okay, that's what we have to do on our show. You have to speak to people like you normally speak to people. You cannot be social media.
Right.
If you're going to do it. So, yeah, that's really the, but that's one thing that, and today was one of those days where I just went, you know, and I, every hour I come in going, wow, there's just so many different topics here. But I did figure where I want to go though.
Okay.
Because it's a big question. And the thing is, I was just coming out of the top of the hour and I just found this and I said, and I didn't get a chance to listen to this.
All right.
Okay, but
all
it's from CNN. But I and this may even be better not to listen to it.
Right.
And to break it down a little bit, but this was, I don't know if it was yesterday or whether it was Tuesday. I don't know. But they brought Democratic voters on to CNN, a panel of Democrat voters who voted for Hillary. Mm-hmm. One of the things we've always asked is, we have no idea how Democratic voters think. We don't know how, we don't know what they're thinking. Do they agree with Ocasio-Cortez? Do they think she's nuts? We believe that there's a certain element and a certain demographic. I don't know what the, I don't know who they are or what demographic you could put them into that is looking at the Democrat Party and saying they're nuts. But there also has to be some Democrats that agree with everything that's going on. And so Allison Camerata brought on a panel of Democrats who voted for Hillary in 2016 and asked some different questions. And I thought, let's play it and then respond. Okay, here's part of the interview.
There's a lot of talk about how strong the Trump base is. How many of you are worried that that's going to be tough to beat?
I'm totally worried. I'm absolutely worried because even people who, you know, I've seen in my own family who voted for him and then sort of, you know, recanted and were like, oh, my God, what did I do? Are now sort of coming back around. And that troubles me. But I think that they are tied to the party more than the person.
But I think having the Congress be the House be blue now is extremely important on this issue because we can really hold his feet to the fire and bring out to the American public so much of the terrible things that he's done. So I think
he's,
we have
he's
that
officially
benefit.
An unindicted co-conspirator.
Yes, right? He is.
That Michael Cohen testimony. I mean,
yes,
there's a
is.
Check with his name on it when he was in the office.
The thing is,
of the president.
I don't think they care. I don't think that they care. I think at the end of the day, they think that he's done what he set out to do. And so it doesn't matter what's said because they don't. Again, they're going to go back to voting the party line.
How many of you, show of hands, think that the Mueller report will reveal a crime?
A new crime? I don't know. I think it's probably at this point old news, whatever's going to come out.
You know it is crimes.
Right. Do you? I mean, you think that there'll be an indictable crime?
Yes. Indictable, but whether or not that'll happen or not is
indictable.
There's so many things that have been happening already that have happened that are indictable. I don't think that I was so looking forward to the Mueller report coming out and being like, yeah, this is the nail in the coffin. We're going to walk him in right out of the White House. And now the closer we get to it, you know, and the more stuff that has come out and come out, I really honestly, I don't know that it's actually going to do much because
but
we
why
know.
But what's changed? I mean, what made you think that it was going to be an open and shut case and now you don't think that?
Because I've seen so many other, we've already seen so many other indictable things that we just kind of sit on or it goes away.
What do you want Congress to do about it?
I mean, they have to impeach. If the president is accused of high crimes and misdemeanors and we have proof and evidence of that, I mean, it's their duty to defend the Constitution, not the party, not the politics.
How many of you think that the Congress should move forward with impeachment proceedings?
Yeah, should. Yeah.
When the Mueller report
comes out. But should is a horrible word.
Yeah,
like,
right.
There's a lot of things that should happen.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's their duty when the report comes out, if that's what it is.
You would all be comfortable with moving towards impeachment, even though you know how it played out the last time.
You need him voted out.
Yeah.
You need everyone to go to the polls and vote him out. For him to be impeached, that's almost like just another, some more fuel to the fire for his base. For him, like, okay, see what happened? See, they couldn't beat us the old-fashioned way, and they had to beat us this way.
We'll never convict him in the Senate.
Right.
We'll spend months and months talking about it instead of talking about the candidates. Yep. And ultimately, I think it'd be healthier for the country to kick him out of office via the ballot box.
And Nancy Pelosi agrees with you.
Yeah.
I got it.
Okay, I just wanted to break here for a moment. Did they mention any specific crime?
No, I kept asking myself every time they made a comment, based on what? based on what? What is it that you think he did? Because I, what I'm tired of is, and this is the kind of dismissing it, dismissing the question away, because they'll all say, oh, well, it's clear. Can't you see? Can't you see? Show me the crimes that he committed. Show me the collusion. Show me the event, the criminal event that happened even, and then tie him to it.
And so this is, Eric and I did not listen to this audio cut before we played it.
No.
And it's exactly what I thought.
Yep. Where are the specifics?
There is no difference from what members of Congress are saying. You know, we've said this before where people are saying, well, Congress doesn't represent me. And we've always said, actually, Congress represents the people precisely. There's nothing different from what they said than what Gerald Nadler says.
What I would love to ask these individuals here is, do you believe that Trump or someone close to Trump worked with the Russians and actually hacked into the election machines? I would ask that question.
Yeah.
I would love to see, show me the hands, the show of hands, how many of you believe that? Because the reason I ask that, or the reason I say that, is because we go back to the poll that was done where the majority of Democrats believe that happened. Yeah, there's not, tell me one precinct, one state that's coming in saying, it's clear they hacked into our system.
Well, the question, and she didn't ask good questions at all, because the next question would be, well, wait a minute, you want them voted out. You just said you wanted to, there were hands raised for impeachment, by the way. The majority of hands went up for impeachment. Mm-hmm. Well, you first said impeachment, but then you said he should be indicted. Well, wait a minute. If he committed crime, shouldn't he be kicked out of office? Shouldn't they go after him at that particular point? You all say he committed crimes. Nobody can identify what crime he committed. So we're, I mean, they're all over the place. If you listen to it, they're all over the place. It's almost as if there's just a bunch of, it's almost exactly what we have said. There's just emotion and electronic charges going through the synopsis of their brain, which are just, we hate the guy who committed, but nothing is a coherent, consistent statement.
Well, because everything that led up to the point where the one man said, well, we just got to vote him out, was all about, they were convinced he committed a crime. If I'm convinced somebody committed a crime, I'm telling you, they need to be held responsible. And some butts need to be sitting in prison. But their response was, well, no, just vote him out because otherwise his base would be motivated. Well, what do you care if justice is done?
More coming up. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Turn on radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. I want to play the focus group one more panel of Democrats, because we always wonder what Democrats are actually thinking, not the members of Congress, but the actual voter. As we said, on when it came to what crimes Donald Trump committed, none of them could be specific on what crime he actually committed. Now we go to another question, the final question on CNN to the panel of Democrats.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, your thoughts.
She's a badass.
Man.
Oh, my
God. Yes. Okay. Yay.
I love her.
Yes. Wow. A woman.
Amazing.
And again.
Yes. I mean, she's asking the right questions. I don't feel like she's playing games. I'm so excited about her. She is smart. She is intelligent. And I cannot wait to see what else she does.
Well, I know she's got the Democratic Party nervous. And, I mean, in a way, they should be nervous.
Sure.
Because, you know, she does represent the new guard, the new generation. I think she really kind of personifies, you know, where we expected things to go.
She is the Kennedy of the future. She has got this down pat. And she has also nailed it as a woman in a male-dominated field. This is how we, women in the male-dominated fields, we have to work like this all the time. She is the candidate of the future. She, get ready for her, because she's coming.
Based on what issue?
Yep. There you go. And the funny thing is, Eric and I are looking at each other. We did not preview that audio at all. We just listened to it, and it's exactly what we thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, anybody out there, you hear Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you hear the people that support her, And we wonder, what does the Democrat voter think? There's the panel of Democrat voters on CNN.
Right. So for those saying, well, you know, the Republicans are just giving her too much attention. No, she won. She's everywhere. She's probably, right now, she's probably the most vocal among them in the House. Even Nancy isn't as vocal as Ocasio-Cortez has been.
No.
So, and then you hear it from Democrats right there. They love her. She's the future of the party. It's not us saying it. I'm convinced she's going to be around for a long time. I am convinced that one day she might be, she well could be the Speaker of the House. 20 years from now? So for those that dismiss it on the left, you probably shouldn't. Here's your forecast.
We'll continue to see scattered rain showers in the west in California and snow showers in some of the upper elevations of the mountain regions of the Pacific Northwest and Central Rockies. A portion of that energy has broken off and will provide snow showers for parts of the northern and central plains today. If you're going to be traveling I-80 in and around Des Moines all the way out through, well, Cheyenne, as a matter of fact, and I-29 north and south through Nebraska, you can expect to run into some wintry precip, as much as about 4 inches of snow expected. And you look at Des Moines today, a high of 25 degrees. By Saturday, the high is 41. The moisture remains, so we'll go from snow to rain in the course of the next 48 hours. That entire system is advancing eastward. We'll see portions of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio affected with some mixed wintry precip. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Machine, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I will say that the majority of those panelists, there were six panelists in that focus group of Democrats. I don't believe any of them were probably over 50. Okay. Yeah. I think the majority looked like they were between 35 and 50.
All right.
They also, none of them were for Biden. None of them were for Hillary. None of them were for Sanders. They're looking for, I won't say that they represent all the Democrats out there, because I know that there are Democrats out there. I know there's Democrats out there right now that look at where the Democrat Party is going and think these people and their ideas are insane. Their ideas are nuts.
Right.
There are Democrats right now that look at Ocasio-Cortez and say, oh, somebody shut her up. They actually do exist out there. Now, our point was, that is the image that CNN is attempting to portray of the Democrat voter out there, that she is great, that Trump should be impeached or removed from office. Mm-hmm. They believe that he has committed crimes. They cannot identify the crimes, and they cannot tell you why Ocasio-Cortez is so great or why her ideas are so great. Those are the kind of Democrats I would love to sit down in a discussion with and just find out what they think and what they know about the actual issues.
And I would love to, you know, say, okay, setting aside the Green New Deal, first of all, well, we could go into a whole 10-hour conversation with each of those individuals on the Green New Deal.
But the Green New Deal, we'll get back to where you're going in just a second, but the only defense of the Green New Deal that you're getting from Democrats is that the right is distorting it by quoting from the actual fact sheet of the Green New Deal.
Right. Well, just like they're dismissing the conversation surrounding her as, well, you're focusing on her because of all the memes. You're focusing on her, and she's not the future of the party. Yeah, she is for a number of Democrats.
Yeah.
Look, she won. Don't ask me. Don't point to me. If she's in the news and promoting ideas as a lawmaker, we're going to talk about it. But even outside the Green New Deal, my next question is, okay, tell me something else that she's promoting that you like and why. And I think that's, you know, aside from the generalized idea or ideas, the whole, we talked about this when it happened. The HQ2 thing with Amazon, that elevated her because that was her district or is her district. And that was a win for her. Politically, it was. But it was a win in the way that you had the, you know, the Jeff Flake cornered in an elevator kind of win, when they believed if you just shout long enough and you just get in somebody's face long enough, it doesn't matter what the facts are, you're going to change somebody's mind. And when you do that, you've won. Well, that's trolling. That's not legislation. That's not leading. That's not creating policy. Except when you take those types of ideas and that behavior and then turn it into policy. And that's the concern. I've heard others that may be in the middle or even some Republicans say, yeah, but there's a lot of attention given. She's going to be out soon. I don't think so. Even if let's say she lost next year, I don't think she's done by any stretch of the imagination. Beto lost. They're not done.
Well, what I really wonder when you heard all of them say, you know, they were all shaking their heads when the one and then the second person also put in that she is so incredibly intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all shaking their heads, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously? Now, you may believe that since she is loud and she is absolutely anti-Trump and is loud about it, that you like her because you like anybody who was loud against Donald Trump. Do they honestly believe that what she is proposing is based on her incredible intelligence?
Right.
As we have stated, and it was simply on the substance of what she put forward, none of it is based on her gender, her height, her weight, her eye color, or her ethnicity. It is based on the substance of what she promotes. It's elementary school kind of stuff. That's what it is. It's elementary school kind of ideas and a mindset of somebody who was in elementary school. You know, I was thinking, right, again, I'm coming into work tonight again, and I'm just thinking, as I look everywhere, Eric, I'm driving my vehicle. I'm like, wow, how many hundreds of thousands of parts are in here that you've got to do everything right? Everything's got to be done right here. This is the real world. I'm driving the real world. Everything has to be made correctly here. Think about it. Think about the infrastructure. Think about the minds that are focused on everything in this vehicle has to be done right. On the road I'm driving, everything has to be done right. On the phone that I'm on, everything has to be done right. It's the real world, everything. And I was looking at everything surrounding me as I was coming into work saying, all of this is a real world where people actually have to accomplish things and get it right. I said, I'm going into work right now. I actually had this thought a mile from work. So I'm going into work right now to talk about the people that run the country where none of their mindset is based on any of the reality of everything that the majority of us are focused on every day, which is a reality of getting things right because you have to get things right. Because if you don't get things right, people get injured and people die. And therefore, and when you look at everything out there, it's all in the private sector, is it not? All the private sector is producing all of it. If you don't get it right, somebody gets injured, somebody dies. And I think the contrast is just really unbelievable. Where all of a sudden, these people that are up there are throwing out pure mindlessness. I mean, pure childishness on their ideas that are just insane. And these same people who are involved in the private sector, many of these same people, that they have to get it right every day. Critical thinking is imperative. Just jettison all of that and say, that person is a genius.
Right.
How do we get to that point?
I don't know. Well, it is that, you know, interesting that we talk about the infatuation with a celebrity. Last hour, talking about Michael Jackson, and we talked about how it has clearly become, and maybe at some point was for a long time, has been part of the political landscape. But there's a difference today, and that difference is the amount of exposure. Back in the day, as we were talking about the Alex Trebek story, the evening news was your exposure to an Ocasio-Cortez, right? You saw her, you would see her, what, once or twice a day, maybe in the paper, if that. You know, once in the paper, once on evening news, if that. Well, now the exposure is everywhere. Because not only are the media groups who are writing about her, talking to her, and then they put it on their social media and their websites. Everybody's sharing it. They're talking about it. And the conversation becomes this big echo chamber. So it's the level of exposure. And for those who don't apply the critical thinking and insist on being a fan politically, because again, you heard them. They didn't say
anything.
This is what they didn't say how politically or with what ideas she was going to lead. It was about her. It was about her, not about her ideas. I don't care who it is. I don't have anybody that I would vote for that I would say, oh my gosh, this person, because he's great. Or she's great.
Because
I like that person. And she's going to be great because he's going to be great. Wait, just wait for it. No, I vote for the person who I believe is going to be able to, is going to have the best chance of implementing the ideas that I believe in as policy. It's that simple. But it doesn't, that's not for a lot of people, that's not where it lives. She is everywhere, and she's accessible literally in the palm of their hands. They can look down and see something about her and get exposure to her. They clearly, because of their political bent, are going to dismiss the criticism. They're not thinking about the ideas. What they're thinking about is her. She's the next rock star. She's the next one that needs to be given deference because she is she. She's because she exists. The same thing happened with Barack Obama. Same thing happened with Bill Clinton to a certain extent, and probably a number of politicians before them because of their nature. But the difference between them her and all of those before her is the level of exposure. Even in 2008,
and we've seen political idolatry with Trump too.
Oh sure. Oh yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's happened way too often, and we said that's exactly what the other side does. I'm not building up a rock star. What he's done in his personal life, okay, great. That's separate from what he will do as a public servant, what I want him to do as a public servant. And the same applies to him or anybody else I voted for. I don't care who it was. In fact, I believe in holding their feet to the fire. If they step out of line, I believe in and do something that I'm against, because I voted for them. I believe there is should be a greater calling on the supporters to say, hey, don't do that.
Yeah, you're right. I'm more likely to be critical of the person I voted for,
right,
more than the person that I didn't vote for.
Yeah, because
there's an expectation that I have of what I want them to deliver for me.
Well, as a father, I would treat my children differently than somebody else's child. I mean, I might have an expectation for another child that I know. But I have those true and very deeply rooted expectations for my own children, and you know, they're obvious. And as any parent would tell you, I'm going to be very critical of my children when I ask them to do something. That's kind of, but certainly as a public servant, it should always be the case. But that idolatry is alive and well on the left, and you just heard it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He's Eric Kearney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. The one interesting thing, and again, you're only picking six people
right.
out of hundreds of millions, but the focus group that CNN had of Democrats that voted for Hillary.
Yeah.
All of them, Hillary, Biden, Sanders, no. They're done with them.
So it's interesting, you see the other polls where Biden and Sanders are... And also, too, I don't know where these individuals live.
Right.
These six. I mean, in a metro area, maybe you don't get the support, or a certain state, you don't get the support for Biden.
And you can skew a focus group big time.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. But it is interesting looking at the big numbers for Biden and Bernie in certain areas. And so where is that split right now? In 2016, Bernie, you know, he was catching, he had a lot of steam behind him as the primaries moved out west. And it makes you wonder, and it was young demographics. What are the demographics that support Bernie right now? How many are in that group? And with Biden, same thing. And do they have a chance or not? I mean, we talked about historically how it might work with a Biden being more of a moderate and the liberals fighting to prove who's more liberal. All of a sudden, Biden becomes the nominee.
Here's a question, since they're still asking, because yesterday it was like, did she backtrack a little bit? Might she still run? How come Hillary isn't in any of those polls up until the other day?
That's a really good question.
Why wasn't she in there?
Well, because over the last couple of days, you've even heard them say, oh, yeah, but even though she says no, she means yes. Because they always go back to 2004, right after the 2004 election. There was a huge call for Hillary to run.
What would her number
Bush
be?
Bush had just been reelected, and it was her time, right? And she was saying, oh, no, 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 oh, no, no, no. And, of course, that changed. Now I know there's a difference between the year before and 4 years before, but nonetheless, she could. Well, why not put those numbers out there to say, if she were to change her mind, here's what, because Biden's not officially in yet.
No, I guess that was my whole point.
Yeah, so why wouldn't you see that? Well, you and I were talking about during the break, as you were talking about and expanding on this poll of, or this group here, this group of six people at CNN that they were talking to, Democrats, that they dismissed. They did not want Hillary. And I thought, maybe the DNC has internals that show that really nobody wants her to run in 2020.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.